Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the very next episode of the podcast. This episode, I'm introducing you to someone who is a super deluxe cool human being named Clementine Moss. And Clementine is one of those rare individuals who says she's going to do something and then she just does it. For example, in her 20s, she was kind of lost in trying to figure out what she wanted to do. She looked at her friends and she thought, oh my gosh, I have so many musician friends. Why don't I start being a musician? And then she learned the drums. And from there, it was off to the races. She has founded many bands. She's been a member of many bands. She's done so many tours. She's performed in front of so many people. Honestly, it's just kind of staggering to understand that one day in her 20s, she decided to do this and look where she is now. But for the past 20 years, she's been playing Zeppelin in Zepparella, a Zeppelin tribute band, but she's also been writing and performing her own music. And fun fact, in November 2023, she was the guest drummer for the 8G Band, the house band for Late Night with Seth Meyers on NBC. Now, we talk a little bit about the contemplative practice that Clementine does and how that kind of marries with her hard rock life, lifestyle, and music. And it's a really fun conversation. And then she shares a few miracles that I think you'll really appreciate. There's no doubt in my mind that this human being is doing good work in the world, but not only that, she's here and she's a badass. All right. That's enough for the intro. I'm going to let us get into the juicy part of the episode, and that's my interview with Clementine Moss.
I was able to rise up in a lucid dream, right? Rise up out of my body, and I was seeing above the above our consciousness into the place where I could see everything. And I looked down and my feet looked like little tadpole feet, and they were splashing around in Clem, who was lying on the bed sleeping. And I was kind of splashing around in her middle, the feet were. And I thought, that's strange that I'm still attached to her. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'm dying. I would say that I'm a musician and a writer and a spiritual counselor. And one of my favorite topics and kind of what I feel like my, at this point, my life mission is using my musical career as a metaphor for speaking about contemplative practice, meditation, and other spiritual practice.
And I have seen some YouTube videos online of you playing the drums. And it is absolutely wild and fabulous. How did you get into doing that?
Yeah, it was kind of a strange route. I went to school for writing. I considered myself a writer, you know, all the way through from actually about 8 years old. I just thought that I would be a writer. And then in my mid to late 20s, I was in New York City. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to say. And I was getting frustrated in a sense of not having lived a full enough life to have anything to say. And I was really longing for some kind of creative output that involved other people, collaboration. And I had musicians in my orbit. And I thought, what if I became a musician? And it didn't, for some reason, it didn't occur to me that it might be difficult since I didn't know how to play anything. But just through a series of circumstances, I took a drum lesson and it was transformative. It just really spoke to me. And it was like I found my instrument, and drumming has taken over my life for the last 30 years or so.
Yeah. And you do a lot of touring. and or you have done. You have been on the road a lot. I was reading a little bit on your website, and that life is not easy. It can be utterly exhausting, but it seems like it. What I'm reading is that you thrive on it and you kind of love it. Is that true?
It's true. You know, I always say, you know, I think it's kind of a constitutional thing to be able to be in that kind of constant movement, constant difficulty, because you're, you know, every moment that you're on the road, you're dealing with, you know, is the van working? Is, you know, are people doing what they said that they would do? Are they showing up where they're supposed to be showing up? Is the gear working? Is everything working? You know, there's so many little pieces. Is the hotel room bug free? Or is the, you know, is the air conditioning working? Like all these little tiny things. And some people are able to just ride through those questions and just see where it takes them and not get too hung up on those details. And I just seem to be one of those people.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Do you have a favorite tour memory?
I have so many favorite tour memories. You know, I have some really strange ones. The biggest tour memory I have is just of being on stage and connecting to an audience, having audiences, being in a room and feeling like we're all of one moment, you know, one connection, one heart, in that moment. I play Led Zeppelin's music, and that's music of, you know, that was playing when people's children were born or where they got married, and, you know, these magical moments. And so we're all kind of in that shared timeless, moment. So, you know, that's the biggest thing that I love. As far as, you know, little stories, you know, I remember having a day off. This was many years ago, and being in a band with two other women, and we toured around the country all year long, every night a different place. And we happened to have one night off in, I think, North Dakota. And we were driving through, and I said, gosh, I wish there were just tacos. I haven't had tacos in a while. And we turned a corner in this little road that we were on, and it said Tuesday Tacos. And I was like, yay. And we sat down at this little place. There's nobody else there. We were having tacos on the patio, and some people sat down, and we ended up, through the conversation, we ended up going to this man's home. He was raising buffalo. And so we sat in the back of his pickup truck with like 30 buffalo near us watching the moon come up. So there have been really magical little moments like that in my life that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't picked up a drumstick.
Wow. Yeah. I love that. It kind of like that synchronistic happening of, you know, the tacos, there's the taco stand. And then, I mean, I'm sure at the beginning of the day, you didn't think to yourself, you know, by the end of the day, I'd like to be sitting in some field looking at the moon in Buffalo. You know, you didn't say that to yourself. And so these happenings or these moments of beauty that kind of surprisingly show up in our lives. I mean, I think that's a reason to get up in the morning, frankly, because you never know what adventure the day is going to bring. And I just love that. Plus also you being open to meeting strangers on a patio,
yeah,
at a taco stand. And I think, yeah, that's key too, is being open to those experiences.
You know, when you travel through the world for a long time, you know, the first time I went to Europe, I was by myself. When I was 22, I was like, I'm going abroad, and, you know, had $800, a one-way ticket. I was like, I'll figure it out. You know, this was before the internet, so I have no idea what the heck I was doing. And I just kind of made my way through the world. And women in my life would tell me, you know, oh gosh, how can you do that? Aren't you afraid? And what I've always found is that when you just sit quietly in a place, the world comes to you. Like when you're traveling, the world does come to you. Now you have to have, you know, of course, discernment of, you know, your inner, you know, something doesn't feel right, then, you know, you pay attention to that and feel strong in yourself that way. But I've had the most wonderful experiences, traveling as a single woman through the world. I feel like 99% of people, are caring, wonderful people who just want to show you their place where they are. And that's the same for America. You know, I love traveling through this country. People are so kind, so generous, so excited to know what you're doing. And I feel maybe that is part of our issues these days is, you know, people are insulated. You know, when we're out in the world sitting in a restaurant, we're looking at our phones. We're not just sitting there kind of enjoying the day. And there's a lot of opportunity to really know people and to really see how big-hearted, you know, so many people are. You know, American people are, you know, they're so kind. They step in immediately when you have a question or need something. So that's been my experience. Yeah.
I think that is so true. And, you know, I travel across the country for various reasons, driving everywhere, which we won't go into now, but I do have to say that I am of the belief that in the majority of situations, bystanders will rush into the burning building to help whoever's in the burning building. And, you know, until you're confronted or you engage or you encounter someone who might be different than you, you have no idea who they are. But then after a while, you actually get to know them and see that they're just like you, and they want the best for everyone. And they are in this world to make it a better place, however they think. You know, I agree with you. I think the media kind of profits saying that we're all so different and that we aren't going to get along and this person is terrible and this person is terrible and what have you. But I do think the majority of people are good, open-hearted, big-hearted, kind-hearted, you know, and they just don't know what's going on in the world along with the rest of us. So thank you for pulling that piece in because I think it's really important. Question always is, you know, you talk now about a contemplative practice and about meditation. Did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like for you as a kid? And did that help kind of bring you into the practice you're doing now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up Catholic. I was raised Catholic. My mother was Catholic. She's not a kind of non-denominational Christian now, I would say. Goes to a Presbyterian church. But, you know, when we were growing up, she was in the Catholic church. So I went all the way through and got confirmed. And, you know, it was a tricky thing in my family because my father was an atheist. And when they got married, he said, you know, well, this is kind of an issue because, you know, I'm not going to go to church with you. Like, it's not my thing. And she said, well, as long as I can raise the kids Catholic, then, you know, and he said, that's fine. So I grew up, you know, on Sunday mornings, not being able to eat anything, feeling a little woozy because I'm somebody who likes to eat something. You can't eat anything before you go to church, having to dress up and, you know, scratchy clothes and go with my mom out the door to an hour and a half service while my dad was sitting on the couch watching, you know, watching TV. And also, you know, his kind of philosophies of life, his, you know, it really sank into me. I was kind of daddy's girl as a little kid. So I definitely went to church with a questioning feeling. And in all of the CCD and catechism, you know, I really loved the idea of the golden rule. But then when I saw people around me or in the, you know, readings didn't seem to follow that golden rule, then I felt like I had real high antenna for, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, the day I got confirmed was the day that I told my mom I wasn't going to do it anymore. But I do think that the idea of, you know, like Christ consciousness to me is the idea of having a completely open heart. And to me, that's something to aspire to. So, so there are pieces of that in my belief system, definitely. But I don't believe in a dad God, you know, I believe more in consciousness and in that vibration of love that has created everything. So that's where I veer off, I guess.
And I love that you brought in that the vibration of love, because I've been reading, I mean, look, I'm an inveterate reader. I read so much, but lately I've been reading a lot about shamanic practices, plant medicines, et cetera, but not only, you know, from all over the world. I've been reading these from, and a few years ago, I was talking to a really dear friend who's having a hard time. And I don't know where these words came from, but I said to her, I mean, I said, you have no idea how gorgeous you are as a human being. I mean, you're like this beautiful original song that's going through the world. And she said, oh my gosh, no one's ever described me like that. And I thought, I don't know where that just came from. But that's what I think. And then, you know, I'm reading all these books, and lately what's been hammered through me, all these different tribal societies all over the world, you know, the anthropologist or the scientist that's interviewing them, and they talk about everything kind of being a song and unfurling, that the this universe is a song, that it's, that's kind of like this vibration that's unfolding over time. Of course, the times that we're talking about are so vast that we as humans in our lives can't actually encompass them. But I did think that was pretty provocative. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's that language again. It took me right back to what I said about my friend. And I thought, oh my gosh, what if this whole experience that we're experiencing, that the animals are experiencing, that the universe is experiencing, is in fact a really long and beautiful song that we're all a part of. And also for me, you need to know I'm a science nerd. So I do know that music is also mathematical. So then for me, it brought in math and how people ask, oh, do you think math is invented or discovered? And you know, some people are like, well, it's there, we just have to discover it. And other people say, no, we're inventing it. But if it is a song that's unfurling over time, then you can also bring in all the theories and mathematical constructs that we come up to kind of figure out what this universe is about or what it is like. And those two things just really dovetail really beautifully together. I also love the idea or the concept, the notion that we're living in this vibration, this great, beautiful song that's unfurling, which could be love. Maybe the song is what love is that we're experiencing. I don't know. That was all just a tangent I went off on.
Well, you're speaking my language, because these are the kind of things that I think about all the time. So a couple of things. So first of all, I seem to have no doubt in my bones, in my intuition, that the base of everything is love. Because when I sit for, say, I go to a 10-day silent meditation retreat, the vibration that I end up finding at the base of everything is love, is this like alive love, not love the emotion. Because love, the emotion, has the opposite with it. Like any emotion carries its opposite, right? We kind of love in spite of this knowing of, right, this other. But love, the energy, is kind of what I'm thinking of. And when you think about us being a song, which is a perfect way to describe us, we're molecules that are being held together by vibration, right? And so we are being a song that's being played. And how can we, so you think about a song and you can sing it in a lower register or you can sing it in a higher register. And imagine if your vibration is in a low register, right? It feels low. We have those days where everything feels like we're almost underwater, right? Heavy, low. What does it take for us to find a higher vibration and to vibrate there? And I think the only way we can do that is to recognize in ourselves, in contemplative practice, in our self-awareness, what makes me vibrate in a high way. You know, I remember once I was in my house for about 4 days doing stuff and everybody was gone. And after 4 days, I was like, oh, I got to go get something from the little deli down the street. So I walked down the street and I spoke, you know, just to a few strangers. And I came back up the street and I realized that I felt buzzy, right? And I realized, oh my gosh, just that other people made me happy, lifted me up a little bit. I hadn't been sad or anything before that, but I just felt that much more in a higher vibration. And I like the idea of feeling like, for instance, if I'm talking to my friends and we start gossiping about somebody and kind of running somebody down, right? You feel what that feels like. It feels kind of delicious in a way, right? You know, we're a human. We feel kind of delicious to call people out on things. But after a little while, I end up, if I really notice, I notice that what I really feel like is as if I watch too much television, you know, that kind of nauseated, sick feeling. And so I realize that if I can step aside when those kind of conversations go, I maintain this feeling of just feeling okay with people, with the world, right? That keeps my vibration up. So I really love your metaphor of a song. And I also love the idea that we have the ability to alter the song that we're singing. And I don't think it's in, you know, that idea of like, we have to be the best we are and like the optimization of our physical health, all that stuff has with it all of the negative attached to it, right? Like we're not good enough. No, if we let all of that go and imagine right now, what if I am perfect? What if everything is perfect? What if nothing needs to change? And what around me can I find to attach to that vibrates in a high way? Is it the sunset? Is it my children? Is it my dog? Is it my, you know, just other people, knowing that other people are in the world doing good things, you know? So I don't know. That's kind of a long-winded rant there, but.
No. What I was going to say is that I appreciate you, bringing in the idea. I had a guest on a few weeks ago that talked about when she was young, she went to these mega churches and, you know, she was a kid and she was looking on stage and for her, it was awe-inspiring, right? Because they had these bands, they had these singers and the, you know, the collective of the group of the crowd would get roused up and she called it collective effervescence. And I thought that was such a perfect term because you were speaking again of what it was like when you were on stage, you know, and you had these moments with the crowds where this resonance like developed, which I think it was also, I was like, that's collective effervescence. I mean, everybody was kind of united in this beautiful moment where there was kind of maybe there was recognition that you had all created something greater than the sum of your parts. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, those instances are perfect examples of what happens when humanity comes together with open hearts, with joy, with resilience, with letting their cares drop away and just being in the moment. I mean, it's so gorgeous. I also think it's prophetic because I think we need more of that in the world. More people bringing these instances to other people in different places in the world. And that's why I love the work you do with music and with your writing. And I just love your creative spirit because, you know, I love that, you know, on one hand, you're in this MFA program. Like, I'm going to be a writer. And then here you are, you know, decades later, and you're like, oh my gosh, wow, I am a writer, because you do have a book out, but you're also like doing something totally different, which is so surprising and fun. And I think speaks to a vast versatility that you have in your life for bringing forth creative works. I'm just ever so curious, what is your relationship like with your muse?
For me, I make an effort to show up. I need to show up for it. I need to say, I'm going to the studio today. I need to say, I'm sitting down and writing when I don't feel like sitting down and writing. You know, I'm taking time to be inward looking, or to, you know, I feel like in the creative process, we're always putting out or we're taking in, right? And I try to be okay with those times where I feel like I should be doing, but instead I just feel like absorbing. And so a lot of it is kind of being kind to myself, but also, you know, very, very focused. Like, if I have a day where I don't have a show, what am I doing that day to create and really show up and not feel bad if I show up and nothing of use comes out? It's all of use, you know. Even if I get to the studio and record a bunch of stuff that day and then take a right turn and realize I'm never going to use that, at least that has, it's like a tap running clean, you know, at least that got flushed out and now I get to go into something else. So I would say really, the relationship with the muse is to recognize that, that it's a relationship that with myself that I, cultivate.
Grateful for your explanation of love that's not dualistic, that is just this kind of, I don't know, you know, we go back to how do we describe God, right? It's like impossible. There are no words. But I think what you're talking about is this kind of vast field that has no polarities, that just is, that is calling everything into existence, that is completely joyful and, in love with what it is and revels in that and calls everything into existence to be just as it is. And we fail daily, and that's okay. It's okay. But it is completely mind-blowing to even try to approach what that is. But I love that you brought that up, that there is no, you know, there, with love, there's hate, with kindness, there's meanness. What you're talking about at the very bottom of everything is something that has no opposite. It is as it is, and it is reveling in as it is, you know, and calling all of us into existence, reveling with it.
Yeah. And that is the creative spark, right? I mean, that is, it's true. It's ultimate creativity. It is creativity. I mean, we could say creativity rather than love. It is the generative energy that keeps the wheels moving, you know. And if we look at creativity and the creative spark and the muse as just tapping into that, then we, our little structures that we've built, can kind of get out of the way and allow for that flow, that allow it to be a communion almost with that energy. And I think that is why I say it's been, you know, it's second nature to me, and that I feel bad when I don't create. It's because I'm not then in that kind of communion with the it, you know, that is that generative spirit, that keeps everything in motion. And it's kind of beautiful if you see it that way, because then it sets aside the idea of not being perfect, you know, not being good enough, not being worthy, you know, then everyone is as worthy as everyone. It's there for us. It's there in you. You are it. You get to just be it. And, you know, I always ask people to just ask yourself several times a day, what if I am perfect as I am? You know, we've been raised in this culture to, and in all cultures, to believe that, you know, that we have to be other than what is happening right now. That's the pull, that's the push towards everything that our focus goes to. And it feels like the bottom falls out underneath me when I say, what if I'm perfect now? What if I need to not do don't need to do anything different right now? It's like, I don't know what to do with myself. You know, it feels so strange to imagine that, but I think it's really helpful. It lets go of, you know, working as a spiritual counselor, like everyone I work with, including myself, has just the deepest feeling of not worthy, not good enough, not enough, not enough. And, you know, some people and, you know, some spiritual places would say it because we've forgotten that we are it. We are the creative. We are divine. We are divine beings. Everything is divine. Everything is of that vibration of love. And it's very like we can take a deep breath and just relax into it and see what comes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't help that we live in a reality that constantly tries to reinforce that we aren't enough, that we need, you know, only if we have this pair of shoes or this purse or this supplement, will we actually be okay.
It's the capitalist way. Yes. We're all good capitalists.
Yes.
Why? Just as anybody, right?
Yes. Well, I would, you know, I find it just so enchanting and wonderful that you have this contemplative practice. And I, just for me, this is just for me. And then you, a lot of your work is heavy metal. And so how do those two things come together?
Well, you know, I started doing long meditation retreats right around the time I learned how to play drums. So for, you know, so long, I thought, okay, I have my rock and roll life and I have my meditation life, right? And these are these two aspects of myself. I feel very, you know, comfortable being of two kind of minds. But, you know, over time, you just come to realize like your life is your life. You know, it's, I don't have a spiritual life and a rock and roll life. It's all one thing. It all goes into it. And, you know, that's kind of what I wrote about in the book is being able to use those ideas that I find on the meditation mat of being able to fall beneath sound, fall into the center of that vibration that we're talking about, allow life to kind of move through me, notice all of the ways that I stop myself from like that kind of flow. When I'm behind the drum kit in front of an audience, my goal is to allow the music to move through me, right? And I notice all of the ways that I stop myself from doing that by saying, I'm not good enough, I shouldn't be here. Who am I to do this? You know, the equipment is bad. The thing is too hot. The sticks aren't, you know, it's like all of these ways that we find to say that things aren't good just as they are. And all the ways I see myself try to take myself out of the beauty of connection with the audience. So it's the same thing. I'm doing the same thing, whether I'm sitting on a meditation mat or whether I'm sitting behind the drum kit or whether I'm, you know, talking to people after the show or dealing with my altercations, you know, in with the promoter or, you know, difficulties with the band or, you know, all of the things that go into it. It's the same thing. How am I keeping my, how am I propping up some kind of personality structure that's not allowing me to keep my heart open and to be present fully in each moment?
thank you for that. And it's a good reminder that, you know, one size does not fit all in this world, and lots of different art, lots of different music, books, et cetera, of all different kinds, because so many people, we're all different and we all have different desires and likes and needs and what have you. So yeah. Well, you know, the main question of the podcast, because I could talk to you for like 10 years, is I would love to hear a story or stories, multiple stories of something that's happened in your life that you have thought was miraculous or magical.
Yeah, well, I love this stuff. You know, I've always been, since I was young, I've always been the person that people say, I've never told this story to before, but here's my story, right? And so, yeah, I love that. And for a long time, I thought that I was only going to hear those stories. I was never going to experience them because there was something in me that was too scared, right, to really be there. Like there was something, some veil that I was putting up between me and the other side. But you know, in my, you know, shamanic practice, in my, in all of the spiritual counseling, studies and work that I've done, you know, I've been in those altered states and I've, you know, got information and had other people be affected by, you know, the information that we got together. And so, you know, in my 20s, I had a dear friend who was one of this jet set psychic who read for, you know, all kinds of people. And she was an amazing, had amazing gifts. I know people now that I speak to who have amazing extrasensory gifts. So I truly believe that those things exist and that we are being helped by the other side quite often. My own personal experiences have been more of reaching the state of no being. The first meditation retreat I had that experience of the dropping away of the self and, feeling as if I were in an infinitely opening and closing flower of existence. And that was very disruptive in my life when that happened because it was so big, but it kind of set me on this path. So I'm really grateful for it. And then I've had extremely big dreams. For instance, I had a dream once where I was able to rise up in a lucid dream, right, rise up out of my body. And I was seeing above the above our consciousness into the place where I could see everything. And it was that that letting go of Clem, you know, where I was kind of in that super high vibration where I was very excited. I was saying, this is it. This is where I've been going. This is, I can see all around me. And then I had a thought like, where are my feet? And I looked down and my feet looked like little tadpole feet and they were splashing around in Clem, who was lying on the bed sleeping. And I was kind of splashing around in her middle, the feet were. And I thought, that's strange that I'm still attached to her. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'm dying. And as soon as the idea of death came in, it was like, whoosh, I went right back into my body. And it was, when I woke up, I had this feeling like I was sloshing around in my body. Like I didn't quite go in all the way. Like I was kind of, and for a couple of days, I kept feeling that. So I've had those funny kind of experiences in dreams. And those are really, they're altering. You know, as I then move through the world, it lets me let go even more of those things that I'm attached to in my, you know, in my personality structure. But I think that, I have a very beautiful and what feels like proven experience of the other side moving through us and helping. So, yeah.
I love that. And I love that you bring in that everybody comes to you to tell these stories, because that's exactly what has happened to me my whole life. Like, what do I have a sign above my head that says, hello, I'm here to listen to whatever strange thing that. But I think one of the things that that's telling you and I and everyone else who experiences this is that, you know, there have to be, we're kind of like these reservoirs, these that people come and maybe there is a sign, we just can't see it above our heads, but someone needs to hear these stories so that then we can go out and tell other people, you know, because some of these experiences for some people are so either scary or staggering or surprising or disconcerting or earth-shattering that they're only special, really special people that they can relate these stories to, because they don't know what to do with them. They do not know what to do with them. And so it's a gift.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, now as a spiritual counselor who helps people integrate plant medicine journeys and, you know, big spiritual experiences, I realize that's kind of where I've been coming to, is to be able to help people get a structure for what it is that they've experienced. Because I know that when that happened to me in my 20s at the meditation place, I just figured that happened to everybody who meditated, that the self fell away and they vibrated for however long that happened in this other, you know, reality. And then I went through a long period where I felt like, you know, I hadn't lived up to it, or it had been a mistake, or I wasn't worthy of it, or, you know, all of those things. I didn't even have a spiritual background to what that even was. It was only years later, as I'm, you know, furthering my education, that I realized, like, oh, I think that's what that was. And so for me to be at this point, and it sounds like for you too, where you've really started to understand the structure of those, like how those things fit into then going out and, you know, living our lives, I think it's very helpful for people.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, I think someone should write a book and bring in like 20 people to tell their stories of inexplicable happenings, frankly, because I think more people need to know that these things are happening. And I appreciate that you brought in earlier that you had this friend who was a well-known psychic, super gifted, you know, went around and helped people or assisted people, listened to people, and that you also have all these other people who are having these extrasensory perception experiences, because people need to know about this stuff and understand that this reality, this world, there's so much more to it than our dualistic Cartesian, everybody telling us, no, this is the way it is, that these experiences of your friend, these other people, they're totally normal. We just don't have language for them yet. And
it's totally true. I feel like every cab I get into, we end up talking about this stuff. Like, I feel like people really do know that this stuff is around, you know, and I know for myself, I fought it for many years, you know, trying to really discount all of the stuff that I really believed in kind of my being, you know, about what happens after you die and all of these things. I had these ideas that I've had since I can remember, and yet I kept trying to discount them to be able to, you know, go with the materialist narrative. And but I think, you know, almost everybody that I talk to seems to have some kind of brush with the woo, you know, at some point. Yeah,
that could be your tagline: have a brush with the woo. But I mean, I think it gives us all hope that maybe the song is changing. Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
that's it. That's a wrap on my interview with the glorious Clementine Moss. To check out a little bit more about this incredible woman, there will be a link in the episode's show notes to her website, but also her incredible book, From Bottom to Buddha and Back, The Slow Enlightenment of the Hard Rock Drummer. And in that book, she tackles, you know, what does it look like to follow a contemplative path of study and practice while also being very much in the world as a rock and roll drummer? And I really like the idea of human beings being more than just these one-dimensional ideas. I love the idea that Clem can not only be a hard rock drummer, but follow this path to enlightenment that includes contemplation. And the idea that every single human holds universes is just such an apt metaphor for Clementine and who she is in the world. I really do urge you to go to her website and check out everything that she's doing, everything that she's been involved in, and how she's bringing music to the masses and making people happy all over the place. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. I want to thank you for supporting me for, 202 episodes now? I love this work, and I love all the ratings and reviews that I've received. So thank you to each and every one of you. But if you find it in your heart to write a review or leave a rating, I would be ever so grateful. And then, if you feel like jogging on over, bopping on over, rock and rolling on over to my YouTube channel, please do. You can see my guests in real life as we discuss the greater questions in this universe. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Clementine. Be a multiplicity of things. Be a painter. Be a reader. Be someone who cuts hair. Well, go to school for that. Be a drummer. I mean, as Clem demonstrated, one day you can decide to do something, including becoming a musician, and then you can go out and do it. Become a speaker. Become a podcaster. Become someone who helps feed the homeless or volunteers at a local animal shelter. Be someone who holds worlds inside you. Someone who is diverse, someone who's complicated, someone who's willing to bring more gorgeousness into this world. Because you know, and I know, that we can always use more gorgeousness. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you for the very next episode, so very soon, of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast.